Well, greetings, everybody. Pastor Buddy joining you live tonight. Glad to have you in here live around the world on WWRV. I'll be right back after our introduction. Johnny Cash.
Come and see. Tell us all. And behold, a white horse.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down. At the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground? When the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices call and voices cry. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. For thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. And at his feet they'll cast the golden crown. Unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down. When the man comes around, hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices call and voices cry. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. Virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured 100 weight and 10 pounds.
Four beasts, and I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are glad to have you in here tonight. Part three of our message that we've got going for you, and we are talking in general about the things that Yahweh give us to talk about here in the book of Genesis, chapter 3. Now notice, when reading Genesis chapter 3, I noticed that it never mentions anything about Satan. Have you ever wondered about why? It merely says the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field. Now, it sounds like that it was the serpent who tempted Eve and not Satan. Now, it says that the beast of the field was more than the average brute beast. In other words, this beast of the field had to have some cunning craftiness about it, or intelligence, because the original serpent, who is depicted as the devil in Genesis 3 by supposing, he's identified very clearly when it says in the book of Revelation chapter 12 verse 9 that the original serpent, the one called the devil in Satan, right there it is. So, when it calls it a serpent, it really is talking about Satan, the crafty one. Now, we know that Satan was a created being. We know that a created being, an angel, is a little bit higher than Adam. So then, he would have had to been probably much more intelligent than the beast of the field. The Bible would seem to confirm that. However, it doesn't take away that the beast of the field was more than a brute, dumb beast. Because, notice this, the moral responsibility of the beast. Following the flood, now how did the beast get over on this side of the flood if they were all destroyed? Well, we know that Noah took two, one male and one female, of all the beast, the creeping things, and put them on the ark and carried them to the other side. That the animals that was native, if you will, to that area. So, man's dominion is now in doubt. Who's going to reign supreme? Is it going to be the Adam man, the beast of the field, the yellow man, or the mixture of Adam and Satan? See, we got a great genetic warfare going on. Now, notice what Yahweh said about reaffirming man's dominion. And the fear of you, Adam, shall be upon every beast of the earth, and upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth, upon all the fishes of the sea, and into your hand they are delivered. This was a restatement of man's dominion, but with a difference that was especially significant in regard to his association with the beast of the earth. Did you notice that? Did you catch that? The beast of the earth. The words fear and dread are in the emphatic sense, actually denoting terror. This relationship of master and mastered was to act as a barrier to the wickedness that brought corruption upon the earth before the flood so that it wouldn't be repeated. The purpose was absolute separateness and station. Therefore, these different races were separated by boundaries divine, I might add, brought about by Yahweh, and that was the absolute purpose of the separateness, and for that reason that they wouldn't come together as they was in the days of Noah, and they were mating, mixing, that would be Adam, man, the beast of the field, Satan, the four genetic purposes of the rivers that came out of the garden are the four distinct, separate, but now inseparable, if you will. We are making the promise said by the Messiah in Matthew 24, as it was in the days of Noah, and as it was in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. Now notice this. For this purpose, surely your blood of your lives will I require. At the hand of every beast will I require it. And at the hand of man. And at the hand of Adam will I require the life of man. Who sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image made he man. The whole context indicates that the beast of the earth would be aware and conscious of his origin, that he was created in the image of the Creator, both the six-day man and the eight-day man. Now, we done proved that the error of Acts 17, the word blood in 26 has been added, so that is incorrect when it says that God made of all man, both the man of Genesis 1:26 and the Adam of chapter 2, the eight-day man, that they were all one blood. That's not true. See, that word blood added to the text changed its whole meaning to where you now believe, and preachers preach it, I've heard them. Churches condone it. I know. Go to any church and see if they don't condone the purpose of mixing and intermingling the blood of all races. And it shouldn't be that way. The whole context indicates that, therefore, these creations should be commanded to abstain from shedding blood. Now, is Yahweh going to require the blood of a dog or a lion that attacks you? Why did they attack anyway? Aren't they supposed to be afraid of Adam? They would be if there were sin in the camp. Sin brought the death of Abel, brought about a protective species, in other words, every species protecting itself with some type of defense. For instance, a turtle. He wears a hard shell everywhere he goes, carries his armor, if you will, on his back. The wild lions, they depend on speed and strength to protect themselves and their predators. They hunt other animals. Why? Why this great animosity? Why do we have to feed off each other? Why do we have to fuse our blood? The descendants of Noah, who spread all over the earth, the anthropoid species derived from the genetics of those beasts of the field. They entered the ark with the rest of the animals, and as the descendants of Noah spread over the earth, they carried with them these and other domesticated animals, domestic plants, metallic implements, and things of this nature, and the descendants of Noah developed superb civilization, the remains of which are found on every continent, but the civilization of a beast of the field has never been found. There's never one made. The civilization of man, the normal man, now remember, Adam is not a man. He's more than a man. He's preeminently the man that Yahweh created to be in his likeness. For instance, Adam was an original species come from the heavens. The beast of the field came from the earth. And so did man, Genesis 1:26. The eighth-day man was a spirit man who needed to come down and have dominion. So he come out of the heavens after Yahweh made him a dense body, if you will, a third dimension body, to sheath or shield the spirit and to protect it and to guide it. And he was the man who is to rule the earth and have dominion. That's him. Now, the only thing that can interfere with Adam having dominion over all of the earth is for him to be watered down, so to speak, his genetics to be reduced. Now, I did a program here last month about the junk DNA that's associated with Adam. There just happens to be 10 strands of DNA that has no creative purpose. It's called junk. Now, I wonder who disconnected that DNA. Well, isn't it said that Yahweh sent Adam, the house of Israel, a deep sleep that came upon them because of their transgression, by the way, because they failed to subdue the earth and have dominion. You see, Adam is not a leader. He's a thinker. He can create other things to make it easier for others, but others can dominate Adam. When it was Adam who was to dominate through his intelligence, but there's something wrong with Adam's intelligence. It's hooked to a system that causes him to have feelings far above the beast of the field or man. Therefore, he blushes. Adam was not a meat eater. We have his diet in Genesis where it said his meat would be the within itself the plants and the herbs and things of this nature. Now, notice this. The Bible states, and to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every herb for meat, and it was so. Now, if you do a word analysis in regard to everything that creeps upon the earth, it's appropriate for the general opinion is that it was confined to insects and reptiles. However, the word creep means to move along with the body prone and close to the ground or to other surfaces. Therefore, the phrase is more comprehensive, and in general, it's understood includes all four-footed animals that can crouch and move forward and, as it were, upon their bellies. Webster's synonyms come in that creep used often of quadrupeds. When Noah came forth from the ark, Yahweh said, "And I beheld. And now I will make a covenant. I will establish my covenant with you and with your seed after you and with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, of every beast of the earth with you, from all that go forth of the ark, and as every beast of the field," or beast of the earth. The book of Jasher tells us that thou and thy household shall go and gather two or couple of living things, male and female. It specifically mentions a couple. Gather a couple, male and female, we assume. But notice, animals are always referred to as pairs, not couples. "I will gather to thee all the animals," as referred to as pairs, not couples. "I will gather to thee all the animals of the earth, the beast of the field and the fowls of the air, and all the beasts, the animals and the fowls." Yahweh brought this about on the next day as animals and beasts and field and fowls into the field, and all the animals and beasts and fowls, and Yahweh sent the beast and the animals that stood round the ark. And it's to be noticed that the beast of the earth is mentioned twice. First to Noah, as he said, "To every beast of the earth with you." In the second instance, notice, the final two words do not appear. Instead, the beasts are included. First of all, two times, one the beast of the earth. First, Yahweh said to Noah, "Of every beast of the earth that is with you." They went out, and in the second instance, the final two words do not appear. Instead, the beasts are separated and included with all those going out of the ark. Does that include that Noah had servants with him in the ark who were beasts of the earth to assist him and his caring for the great numbers of animals in their charge, feeding them and bedding them down during the year of the deluge? Now, it seems so then it would certainly stand to reason that a great deal of help was needed by Noah and his three sons in the discharge of this monumental task for the year of confinement within the ark. Thus, the beasts of the earth who remained with Noah would be his servants, who is a little lower than Adam, and Adam being a little lower than the angels, Satan included, and Satan was measured as more subtle, more wise and cunning than the beast of the field, not the beast of the earth. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there is a missing link. We have long talked about it, that there is a distinct bloodline, original bloodline, from which the beast of the field came. It is a missing bloodline. Now, we have been told numerous times that that there is a creature that runs in the deep forest. And he has the appearance of the beast of the field. He can think. He's very crafty and cunning. He's above the cattle and the creeping thing. He's very intelligent and he can think. Therefore, we are wondering when this missing link will reappear in the genetic puzzle that has long haunted us as we go looking for the evidence. Now, let's look at the plagues which fell upon Egypt to compel the reigning Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go. It's a familiar Bible study. However, a closer analysis will reveal confirmatory truth concerning man and beast. Yahweh said unto Moses, go unto Pharaoh and tell him, thus saith Yahweh of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. For if thou refuse to let them go and will hold them still, behold, the hand of Yahweh will come upon your cattle, which is in the field, and upon the horses, and upon the asses, upon the camels, upon the oxen, upon the sheep, and there shall be a grievous boil break out. This shall come to pass. And it did. But Pharaoh only continued to harden his heart, and therefore the plague was immediately followed by the next, to include, and Yahweh said unto Moses, go unto Aaron, take to you handfuls of ashes of the furnace, and let Moses sprinkle it toward heaven in the sight of Pharaoh. And it shall become small dust in the land of Egypt, and shall be a boil breaking forth with boils upon man and upon beast of the field. None upon the creeping, the horses, or anything like that. There was no mention of beast in connection with the boils upon the various domestic animals. But just like it was in the book of Jonah, the beast of the field was with man, and in this case, with Israel. And he put on sackcloth and ashes and prayed and cried out mightily to Yahweh, just like he had enough intelligence to do that. He was domesticated to stay with the children of Israel as servants. Now, both man and beast were afflicted with boils. There is not a species known in an animal kingdom which has boils. Now, this is a beast who is closely associated with man as his helper given as a servant for dominion. When a different plague came upon them, which came upon the domesticated animals, because Egypt had always had a preferential place in the purpose of God, and as for non-Israelite nations are concerned, it was that they were to experience special punishment for their errant wickedness. And through Ezekiel, a prophecy was given that the land would be under divine chastisement for 40 years. No foot of man shall pass through it, nor foot of beast shall pass through it, neither shall it be inhabited for 40 years. Notice in this prophecy that the foot of the beast was not to pass through it, the foot, not the hoof. There is a difference. animals have paws or hooves. But only a biped has feet as well as hands. This beast, then, was for the dominion purposes of Noah and his son. So when the people of Israel were standing before Mount Sinai to receive the law from Yahweh, Moses was instructed, thou shalt set bounds unto the people round about, saying, take heed to yourselves, do not go up into the mount or touch the border of it, for whosoever toucheth the mount shall be surely put to death. There shall no hand touch it. Note, it is a hand, not a paw or a hoof. But he shall surely be stoned through, whether it be beast or man. The beast to whom reference is made has hands, has feet, just as man has hands, and which has feet, that could have touched the mountain. Here again, the creature of the animal world is designated, but one like unto man in that he has hands, he's a biped, and this then is in reference to the servant beast of the field who accompanied Israel when they left Egypt. Now, I don't know whether you know this or not, but there was ample evidence and the warning when Israel arrived in the land. In Leviticus chapter 18, there was a forbiddance because it had become common practice for man and beast to intercourse and bring forth offspring. Yahweh condemned it because he said that it would produce confusion between the two races, man and the beast of the field and Adam, the three different distinct. Now we got the fourth one that we talked about. That is Satan, who himself mixed with these sons. If you look all over the earth, you can see quite a flow of good and bad in the sea of genetics. Some that were not originally meant to be by crossing, crossbreeding, produced, if you will, species that were none original. They were mixed between the original bloods as they combined to produce hybrids. This was condemned. It's positive proof that the beasts of the field were not domesticated animals. For they do not eat grapes and olives. Besides, Israel would, nor would go, if it was commanded, never have turned their cattle, horses, sheep into their vineyards and their olive yards to browse, trample down, and destroy them every 7 years. But there was a intelligent species, the beast of the field, that could and would gather grapes and olives and not injure the vineyards or the olive trees. And this beast would eat the products of the fields, of the gardens, the orchards, the vineyards, and anything else that Adam kind would eat. Now, confusion. Let's go to that issue. The inhabitants of Canaan, who were to be driven out by Israel upon their entry into the land, were guilty of committing gross abominations in the sight of Yahweh. All these abominations have the men of the land done, which were before you, and the land is defiled. Yahweh therefore warned Israel that their continued possession of land given them through their forefather, Abraham, depended upon their strict obedience to the moral laws laid down, for he said, you shall be wholly set apart, for I am Yahweh, and I am holy. Among the divine commands was this injunction against the crime of miscegenation. Notice, as he said, proving that these two bloods confuse together and bring forth confused offspring. It's against Yahweh's law. Neither shall thou lie with any beast to defile thyself. Neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereof, because it brings confusion. When you lie down, it was to copulate. And by copulation, they had no birth control back then that we know of. It would have to be for purposes to procreate. And Yahweh's law said, you're holy and set apart, and you shall not mix your blood with the beast of the field. Neither shall any woman lay down thereof with a beast. It's confusion. The reference is to the beast. Notice that. The reference is to the beast, who is nearly, in much ways, like a man. The anthropoid, who assimilates many of man's characteristics and shares his moral responsibility, unheard of in the animal kingdom. A dumb brute donkey cannot impregnate man or woman. The blood is not compatible. But there is a beast blood that is. And when we violate this law, and when we fail to apply its penalty, we bring into being the maletos, if you will, or the miscegenated blood that will produce from that time on something that is hybrid, meaning that it's crossed with these two bloodlines, and all of the far-reaching consequences that is mentioned in the Bible are now to be faced. The Canaanites, whom the Israelites were commanded to destroy when they took possession of the land, promised to them they were the owners of great numbers of these slaves. Notice this. By the following statement, you can see that they were owners of slaves. And Yahweh, thy God, will put out the nations before thee by little and little, that thou mayest not consume them at once, lest the beast of the field increase upon you. Now, if you observe that there was no fear expressed, lest the cattle and the creeping things increase upon the Israelites, but not with the beast of the field. Bear in mind that the country of the Canaanites was a rich, productive country, a goodly land. It was in a high state of cultivation, a land flowing with milk and honey. It abounded with cities, towns, villages, farms, vineyards, orchards. This land was occupied by seven nations greater and mightier than Israel. It would have been impossible for the people of Israel to immediately populate the numerous cities and towns and villages and farms and maintain this well-developed civilization. So, accordingly, to the express desire of Yahweh, the land of Canaan with natural wealth and every description that can be mentioned for prosperity would have been destroyed at once with the inability of the Israelites to procreate fast enough to secure this land of milk and honey. So they drove the nations out systematically, slowly, to where finally they conquered the whole land. And all of the civilization that had been built up was preserved. Otherwise, by driving them all out at once, it would have been destroyed. Yahweh is so smart. And if you'll just read the Bible, if you'll just take it into account that the Canaanites, who accumulated wealth and servants, we know, again, in the book of Jonah, that Nineveh was part of this territory that Israel was later driven out of the land and went as captives of this land. Here is Jonah preaching to this captive audience simply because they had failed to do what Yahweh told them to do. So it would have been a violation of the law for Yahweh to release the slaves from the control and protection of their former owners and not give them new masters. See that? When the modern Christian is approached, whether it's pastor or layman, with a query about the identification of the beast of the field or beast of the earth, he will simply say, oh, these are the domesticated animals, the sheep and the cattle and the things that bear burdens, such as horses and oxen, and which cultivate the field. None of those could put on sackcloth and ashes and cry out mightily to Yahweh and repent. A dumb brute beast has no law against it because it don't transgress. It's part of Yahweh's things that he made good. The only thing that is made good and turned out to be evil is man. Notice it. It's well known that domesticated animals subsist on grass, hay, and cereal. Not one of them is a flesh-eating animal. But the biblical beast of the field is a flesh-eating creature. He's actually the worst form of flesh-eating. He's also a man-eater, a cannibal. Now notice this statement to prove cannibalistic nature. And when the Philistine, Goliath Gath, looked about and saw David, he disdained him. For he was but a young, ruddy, fair, good-looking individual. And the Philistine said unto David, am I dog? You come to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his God. And the Philistine said to David, come to me. I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Now, you couldn't give it to a cow or a domesticated horse or an elephant. Notice, the Philistine, who was a mixture of bloods, was incensed against David by only for this reason. Number one, he was a young lad. Not only that, but because he was ruddy and of a fair countenance. Bear in mind that ruddy means to show blood, in the face, rosy. David was an Aryan white man, pure-blooded, with his face rosy. And we know it's true because if he had been born of pure-blooded parents, he would never have been able to be king of Israel if he hadn't been. And so then he was pure, red-blooded, ruddy, white, fair countenance, a good-looking man. Notice this. After cursing David, Goliath threatened him with death, after which he would feed his body to the beast of the field. Now, have to be the lions or the tigers, but not the domesticated animals that people try, preachers try to identify this with when they're explaining the beast of the field. It can't be done. When Adam named the animals, he gave the beast of the field the descriptive title, beast of the field. Both the Philistines and the Israelites recognized the beast as a flesh-eating beast of the earth. And he is frequently referred to simply as beast. It is significant that David referred to the wild beast of the earth, for this would properly designate those servants with cannibalistic property. Further, it supports the fact that the beasts of the field are flesh-eaters, as given by the Bible account of Rispa's touching exposition of motherly devotion in guarding the bodies of her son who were hanged by David's order. And Rispa, the daughter of Ai, took sackcloth and spread it up on her. And from the beginning of harvest until water dropped upon them out of heaven and suffered neither the birds of the air or the vultures to rest on them by day, nor the beasts of the field, the cannibals, by night. The prophet Jeremiah was informed by Yahweh about the coming captivity of the southern kingdom of Judah. At the same time, he was instructed to tell the surrounding non-Israelite kings that they would be compelled to serve Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, whom Yahweh called my servant. They were to be brought under the yoke of Babylon, for world dominion was to be delivered into the hands of the monarchs or the Babylonian succession of empires for a specifically named seven times or 2,520 years. Therefore, Yahweh commanded Jeremiah to say on his behalf, and now have I given all these lands in the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and the beast of the field have I given that they may also serve him. Now, do you know that during the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, that the Bible said that he lost his mind, and he became wild and vicious, and went down and lived among the beasts of the field for 7 years? Now, if you look at the records of history, it will disclose that slaves have been in the palaces and homes of kings and nobles of every age. So Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that should come upon Babylon, even all those words which are written against Babylon. And Jeremiah said to Seraiah, when thou comest to Babylon, and you see and shall read all these words, then shalt thou say, Yahweh, thou hast spoken against this place, to cut it off, that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but that it will be desolate forever. Ladies and gentlemen, you got my message tonight, part three. I hope and trust that you've enjoyed our study. This is Pastor Buddy, and we just came off of the Sunday night adventure with WWCR. We have a sponsor who is sponsoring us full, the full program, Dr. Gary, and we invite you to tune in every Sunday night on WWCR on 4.840 on Sunday night at 9 o'clock. Make it a point to note that and to join us on Sunday night. We're on 6 nights a week, 5 on WWRB and 1 on WWCR. About all I can handle, I guess, unless somebody would like to sponsor me on Thursday night, which we don't have any to sponsor for Thursday night. But Yahweh bless you, Yahweh keep you, and Yahweh prosper you, and above all, may you learn what the Bible has become, a hidden treasure of hidden words and deep things. May you be blessed going in and blessed coming out in your understanding. May you look deep into the words that have been changed, like, or added, like blood. He's made of all blood. That's not true. Ladies and gentlemen, when the race is original, stay original, that pleases Yahweh. When the races corrupt and mix and come together, like snakes, they take up on that snake spirit. For Satan's goal is to mix all the bloods upon the earth and destroy the original races. That's his game, to kill. You know how he kills? Through genetics. Steal. Stole the birthright, right out from the house of Jacob. Now, the people who are worshiping the people who claim to be the birthright sons are not. We've got a mass confusion. So then, I'll be back tomorrow night on the Lake Show, 11 Eastern Standard Time. I'd like to trade that 11 o'clock hour for another 9 o'clock time slot somewhere. If I could, it would help me. I'd have to stay up till midnight to preach the gospel. But we're willing to do so, and we're not complaining. It's like a little better starting time. Prime is 9 o'clock. We got it on WWCR 4.840. Write it down. I'll be back tomorrow night on WWRB 3.185, Clear Channel. Both live. Simulcast on the internet and through shortwave. We appreciate you. We love you. If you'd like to write me concerning this series and you'd like to have it, we're going to give you a lot of information on the series. Perhaps doing 5 hours upon this series. If you'd like to have the 5 set DVDs on the deep things and the hidden things concerning the beast of the field, just let me know, and I'll get it to you. You can write Pastor Buddy, Post Office Box 568, Sweetwater, Tennessee 37874. Now, you can call me tonight. That's Pastor Buddy at 423-351-1082. That's 351-1082 with the area code of 423. You can call my cell phone anytime. That's 423-259-0606. Love you a whole bunch tonight. I've enjoyed being with you. Pray for our radio ministry. Satan finds it awful hard. We have such a hard time trying to pay the bills. We've been so blessed by so few who have managed to hold our hands up. Oh, man. What a wonderful week this has been already. The end of last week was a beautiful end into the week. We got 7 inches of snow right here, right now on the ground. Beautiful white angel cover. I call snow the hoary frost angel cover. And you can see the tracks of the angels as they come and visit you throughout the day and the night. As they watch over you, and as they bless you going in, and they bless you coming out. Yahweh's richest blessings be to you and to yours. May Yahweh bless you going in, and may He bless you coming out, for that is the whole duty of man. Yahweh, the same yesterday, today, forever. Keep yourself from idols, little children. I'll see you tomorrow night. You don't want to miss it. Yahweh bless you.